Good afternoon. I'm Hannah Levine. You've got it tuned to the home stretch only here on 91.3 FM, KXCI Tucson, streaming online everywhere at kxci.org. It's just past 4 o'clock on this Monday, which means it's time to welcome my regular guest. Chris Carey volunteers his time each week to select and research our classic picks and then shares those findings with us on Monday. This week, coming in with a classic from the band Queen. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, we're looking at Queen the Game, which was released June 30th, 1980. So 40 years ago this month, it was their eighth studio album. Queen were formed in London in 1970. The classic lineup is Freddie Mercury, of course, on vocals and piano. Brian May on guitar and backing vocals, and he played piano some as well. Roger Taylor on drums and John Deacon on bass. They evolved out of the band Smile, and Mercury at the time was a fan. They were influenced by prog rock, hard rock, early heavy metal, and over time they began incorporating elements of vaudeville, camp, bombast, with a semi-operatic sound, layered guitars, and overdubs. Their music's been described as a bizarre yet highly accessible fusion of macho and whimsical, which is, I think, a pretty good description. Of course,
yeah, accurate.
Yeah. If you haven't seen the 2018 Bohemian Rhapsody, it's an amazing movie. I mean, it won 4 Oscars. I think it's a really good movie, even if you don't know that much about Queen, or if you do know a lot about Queen, because there's some interesting stuff in there. The band released their self-titled debut in 1973. They were immediately put on the map with this record. It became gold in both the U.S. and the U.K., and they followed it up with Queen 2 in 1974, and later that same year, Sheer Heart Attack. Queen 2 enjoyed moderate success, but Sheer Heart Attack became the group's first platinum record in both the U.S. and the U.K., thanks to the single Killer Queen. And this was followed up by A Night at the Opera in 1975, which brought them international mega superstardom, thanks mostly to the song Bohemian Rhapsody. It was platinum in 7 countries and 3 times platinum in the U.S. And this is the point where Queen went from a pretty big act to a mega super act, selling out arenas worldwide. That album is typically kind of considered their best by most people. It's interesting, though, The Game is considered one of their best, right up there, maybe just behind A Night at the Opera. In 1976, they released A Day at the Races and News of the World. News of the World featured We Are the Champions and We Will Rock You, and Jazz featured Bicycle Race. Those records, even though they didn't get quite the reviews that A Night at the Opera did, they sold very well. Fans kept buying the records, even though some of those reviews were kind of lukewarm. At the same time, I would like to point out, you know, these records came out when punk was beginning to gain traction. And so a lot of critics, I think there was kind of some blowback against not only them, but some other huge rock acts from the 1970s and their excess. And Queen, you know, Queen was probably the archetypical band with as far as 1970s excess went. But you could easily say when they went into the studio to work on The Game in late 1979 and early 80, they were definitely at the height of their popularity. They were huge. They were one of the biggest bands in the world at the time. They recorded, like I said, from late 79 and a little bit in early 1980 at Musicland Studios in Munich, Germany. This was kind of a well-known studio where bands like Led Zeppelin, Rolling Stones, ELO, T-Rex, Deep Purple, Elton John, Sweet, Iron Maiden, I mean, a ton of bands recorded there. And they pretty much all worked with the guy who ran Musicland Studios, Reinhold Mack, who's often just referred to as Mack. This was the first time that Queen worked with Mack, but going on into the 80s, they ended up working with him quite a bit. It should be noted here, too, this is the very first album in which synthesizers showed up on any Queen record. And on into the 80s, they used them a lot more. But throughout the 70s, they would famously put on all of their albums that this record was recorded without synths. So this was kind of an interesting time for a lot of people in that this was the first time that they used synths. Commercially, The Game was wildly successful. It was the only Queen record ever to reach number one on the U.S. Billboard Top 200 album chart, and it ended up being the best-selling studio LP in the U.S., selling nearly 5 million copies. And this is due mostly to the singles Another One Bites the Dust and the rockabilly crazy little thing called Love, which was kind of an ode to Elvis Presley there. Both of those singles became number one on the Billboard Pop Singles chart. Critically, while there were a few detractors, for the most part, The Game received great reviews on both sides of the Atlantic and the best reviews since, you know, Night at the Opera in 1975. And over time, this album has increased in stature and has come to be seen by a lot of critics as one of their very best, and the first time that they really kind of started embracing a lot of pop arrangements. I would say a lot of people would kind of call this the Queen's last great record. After they released The Game, they later this year, they did the soundtrack for Flash Gordon. If I remember seeing that in the movie theater and thinking it was amazing. But and even though there's a couple of songs on that album that are great, it's mostly instrumental. And I think most Queen fans were a little put off by it. And it didn't get that many good reviews. And they followed up with a few other records that didn't get great reviews either, even though they still were selling huge numbers of records. You could say probably in the 80s, there were two high points, though. And that's obviously the collaboration with David Bowie and Under Pressure and the release of Radio Gaga, which came out in 1984 on The Works. Towards the end of the 80s, Queen started kind of dropping in popularity in North America and Europe, and they began touring a lot more in places that they kind of ignored when they were at the height of their popularity. They were playing big stadiums in Latin America, Asia, Africa. And in 1985, they returned to popularity, a lot of it, mostly because of their performance at Live Aid, which they almost didn't do. And it was the closing scene in Bohemian Rhapsody. This performance not only empowered and reinvigorated their popularity, and a lot of critics will cite this as one of the greatest rock performances of all time. And it was seen by millions and millions of people because it was, you know, that thing was telecast all over the world at the time.
I would say reignited.
Reignited, yes, re-exploded. And in 1986, Mercury gave his last performance because he had become too frail to continue on. He died November 24th, 1991, from pneumonia complicated by AIDS. And this was just one day after he announced to the world that he had AIDS. A year later, the remaining members of Queen held a memorial concert, sold out Wembley Stadium, which was huge. And it featured David Bowie, Elton John, Annie Lennox, Def Leppard, and Guns N' Roses. And they raised millions of dollars for AIDS research and awareness. Recent touring, Brian May and Roger Taylor have toured with some other backing musicians and at times Paul Rogers, formerly of Bad Company and The Firm, and sometimes with Adam Lambert. John Deacon retired in 1997, but those concerts still do huge numbers. And kind of the legacy of Queen, I should say, is that not only are they one of the biggest bands of all time, I mean, they sold in excess of 300 million albums, one of the world's best-selling acts and one of the best-selling live acts to ever be. They're one of the few bands where each member of the band has written a number one hit, which is really unusual. Most bands that are really successful, there's one, maybe two songwriters in the band. And I looked up a little bit. I looked into the Beatles because I thought they might be one. And while all members of the Beatles have written a number one hit, Ringo didn't write any songs that were number one hits. There were number one hits when the Beatles was a band. He did release a couple of singles in the 70s that became number one hits in the UK. Another thing I'd like to mention is it's kind of cool is that Brian May has a Tucson connection. I mean, he's kind of a cool guy aside from the fact he's one of the best guitar players in all of rock and roll. He got his PhD in astrophysics in 2007. He was actually in graduate school for astronomy when Queen kind of took off, and he put that on the back burner. And then eventually he finished his PhD, and he's come to Tucson quite a bit, partly because of his ties to astronomy and the great astronomy that's here in town. I mean, the University of Arizona has one of the best astronomy programs in the country. But he's also just kind of fell in love with Tucson. And you see he's made several mentions of Tucson over the years in publications and social media and how much he loves it here. And it's kind of cool because he's periodically been sighted around town. I've never actually got to see
him. Really?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
She's been at shows at the Rialto. I've known people that have seen him at the Rialto. He's been at shows at Congress. And years ago when Plush was still open, he'd been sighted at Plush a couple of times as well. Checking out small touring bands and local bands, which is very cool. I mean, this huge mega superstar guy is just around town at little clubs checking out small bands, which is pretty cool.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah. On top of them being a major 400-pound gorilla in the rock and roll world, they all, I think, were pretty cool guys and all got along pretty well. And I think, it, you know, again, going back to that, all four members wrote hits. You know, a lot of times the lead singer of a band like that, and I'm not saying that Freddie Mercury didn't have an ego, but he didn't have so much of an ego that he wouldn't share the spotlight with his bandmates. And I thought that's a pretty cool thing.
I'm talking about Queen's The Game came out right around this time, 40 years ago, back in June of 1980. Thanks so much, Chris.
Thank you.